Welcome to the Global Business Women's Pod, hosted by the Greater Houston Women's Chamber of Commerce. I am Susan Dyson and extremely excited to be your podcast host. In my day job, I am proud to be the CEO, president, and founder of the Chamber. Every Thursday at 6 p.m., we will bring you inspiring stories of women who are leading in the advancement of women and girls. We will take you with us to our premier events. You will meet entrepreneurs, executives, and philanthropists who will empower and inspire you to succeed. So please mark your calendars and join us for the Empowering Global Business Women's Pod, Thursday at 6 p.m. Now I am thrilled to introduce Janet Gerwich. Janet began her remarkable career at Foley's, rising to the position of Senior Vice President of Merchandising. She then moved to Neiman Marcus and served as the Executive Vice President. And so then, after that, she later founded the cosmetics brand Laura Mercier. I'm sure all of us have used that brand many times, and now uses her entrepreneurial and investment expertise as an operating partner at Advent International, a private equity firm. Janet has served on the boards of Tatchka, Urban Decay, and Dollar Shave Club. And today, she is an investor and a board member of both Drybar and the Olaplex hair brand. I want to hear about that too as well. Janet is the only female investor and board member of our Houston Astros. Go Stros. Please welcome Janet Gerwich.
Thank you, Susan. It's an honor to be here today, to be with the Greater Houston Women's Chamber of Commerce. I've done it a few times and such a great group, so proud. And today's very special because I get to interview Tiffany Masterson, the founder of Drunk Elephant. Tiffany and I have an unusual thing we share. We both live in Houston. We're proud to live in Houston, and we started cosmetics companies. We are not in the oil business, health, or banking, but we both have enjoyed great careers, and we did it here. So it's my pleasure to interview my friend and colleague, Tiffany Masterson.
Hi, Janet. Thank you.
So your background before starting Drunk Elephant is pretty interesting to me. A mother of four in your 40s, why did you think you could start a cosmetics company?
Well, first, thank you so much for having me here today, you guys. I'm so excited to be here, especially with you. I don't know why I thought I could start a cosmetic company. I thought that I was going to be a mom and a wife and, you know, I'd be home all the time, and that's kind of what I just thought, and I never thought of myself as a businesswoman. But I think at some point I got bored. I'm a very creative person. I needed an outlet. And I had four children who were in school at that point. And so I was finding myself, you know, doing all the daily things that I do. But at the end of the day, I was a little bit bored. So, and I wanted to make some extra money, you know, for my family. And I started doing little things. I sold a skincare line for a while that I didn't end up, you know, really believing in. And then I tried to open up a pantry organization company. And so I did little things here and there to try to kind of start. I was sort of starting to feel that entrepreneurial thing. And at some point I started selling a bar cleanser that was imported by my brother-in-law and brother from Malaysia. And I did that for 2 years. And really what happened throughout that process was that I learned about myself that I was fascinated with skin, the function of skin and ingredients and formulations. And obviously I'm not a scientist or a chemist, but, you know, just selling that bar and talking to people and talking, I wanted to be super accessible to people and help them through their issues. And, you know, I'm that person that, you know, I love to solve things for my friends. And so they would call me and say, you know, I have this issue, and I would go and research all the ingredients and try to figure out what it was and try to help them. And I did that for 2 years, and I was really studying ingredients and their function in formulations, and just super interested from a consumer's perspective, not, you know, not trying to, again, be, you know, a chemist, but just really trying to understand why they're there, what they do in a formulation. Should they be there? Does the skin really need them? Does the skin really like them? And it was just a different approach, I think. And I was obviously outside of the industry, so I wasn't, you know, surrounded and looking at other brands or anything like that. Eventually, you know, I went to my investor, who was my brother-in-law, and said, you know, maybe we should do something different. Maybe we should do something here in the States, and maybe we can control, you know, better the ingredients that are in formulations. And frankly, I don't see anything out there that I love on the market that doesn't have these certain ingredients, you know, that I don't want to see in products. I had determined throughout my 2 years of helping people that I believe there were 6 ingredients in formulations that weren't doing our skin any favors. That's a suspicious six. I call it suspicious because it was like a troubleshooter, kind of like when your cable breaks and you have that list of things, you go down the list checking things off. This is my troubleshooting list. Go down, you know, your list of ingredients you're using. If these 6 ingredients are in something, eliminate them and see what your skin does. So I wanted a brand that represented that philosophy, and it didn't exist. And so, you know, that's kind of where I started and got the idea. Maybe we should do our own. And I really felt so convicted by this philosophy that I wasn't scared or nervous to go into an industry that now what I now understand, I would maybe be scared to death. But what I didn't know was something that really helped me.
So it's interesting to me you did something so serious with really efficacious skincare, but you named it a whimsical drunk elephant. What does that mean?
Well, drunk elephant was what it means is that when I found the ingredient marula oil, which is a gorgeous oil, and I wanted that to represent my moisturizer in the line, I went home and Googled marula oil, and this video came up. I remember my children were in the room, and elephants and monkeys were, you know, eating the marula fruit off the ground, fermented probably, and getting tipsy and stumbling around. And I'd been struggling with what that name might be to launch a skincare line, and I for sure wasn't going to call it Tiffany Masterson. It's just not in me. I'm a little shy. And I'm not a doctor. And every other name was a French name for a skincare line, it seemed like. So it just made sense, you know, when I was like, can I call it Drunk Elephant? And 15 people said no, 15 people said yes. I asked a bunch of people. Some of them were like, you know, really cute name, not for a skincare line. That sounds like a bar or whatever, you know. And the other people said, you know, strangely, it's perfect for you because that's your personality. It seems like you would call it that. It seems like you. Whimsical name, you know, hardworking formulations. And I didn't consider whether or not people would take the formulations seriously. It was what it was. It was just me through and through the brand. I mean, I chose everything and I named everything and I sort of just, you know, so it just made sense. It's me, you know.
It worked.
Thank you.
How in the beginning did you start to fund your business?
So right off the bat, I went to my brother-in-law, my sister's husband, and which, you know, I'm very fortunate that he, first of all, believed in me, but I think he saw for the 2 years that I was studying and learning and teaching myself, he saw my passion more than anything. And he saw that I just really believed in this whole philosophy and that I was going to make it happen. I was determined. I had a plan laid out for him and I told him exactly what was going to happen. And of course he took a risk. And of course, you know, because he's my brother-in-law, I had probably my sister in the background nudging him saying, you better or else, you know, kind of thing. But it worked out, you know, I mean, 2 years in, that I got into Sephora. And so those 2 years were kind of hard because he was nervous, of course, naturally he was nervous. And I was just saying, you know, no, we're gonna do this right. We're gonna really spend the money that it takes to don't be nervous, but we gotta go in there and act like a big brand. If we're gonna be next to certain brands on shelves in a place like Sephora, we need to look and act like that. And so it was a little bit of, there were some nervous times in there, of course. I'm sure anybody who starts a brand has that.
Totally. And I told you when I started Laura Mercier, mm-hmm. I got a call from the Small Business Administration of Houston, and they asked me if I wanted to join. And I thought about it, and I said, no, I'm not small, I'm young. And I just think it's so important, like you have to think big if you're going to get big.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was thinking, too.
Well, you did get big. So then you need real money. And how did you get that money? Where was your next source?
So after we got into Sephora, we brought in a few other small partners, sort of to bring in people who could start doing things in the company. My brother-in-law didn't do anything in the company. It was sort of all me, you know, and I know which hats I can wear and which hats I can't. So we started bringing in people like we brought in an attorney. We brought in a guy in Dallas that was a small investor who ended, you know, who really could help, you know, he just helped guide me a little bit. And then we brought in my brother in Austin at some point, because he was, you know, he's very, he keeps books and he's very organized that way, and I'm not. And so that was the next step, and that was not a huge investment, but it was a little bit more money to just get people in there to start running the show. And then after that is when we started getting approached by, they kind of, you know, we didn't really know the right timing, but we started getting approached by strategics and by private equity. So investors. So, you know, that's how that happened. And we started interviewing people and meeting with people and eventually found somebody, you know, VMG, who we thought fit with, you know,
VMG,
our brand.
VMG, a private equity group out of California.
That's right, out of San Francisco. And they had never done anything in beauty before. They did plenty in health and wellness space. But that was perfect for us, because I really viewed Drunk Elephant as a lifestyle sort of health and wellness brand. So it was a great fit. And yeah, they helped us build our infrastructure and bring in executives and people who had been there, done that kind of thing. Up until that date, I'd only been working with people who were outside of the industry, just trying to build the business. But at that point, we started really getting into hiring people who had been in the industry for years and who knew what the next steps would be look like.
Which was great. Tell me about social media. One of the major differences between when I built Laura Mercier and when you built Drunk Elephant is the importance of social.
Yeah.
Tell me, where did you start? How did you do it? And was Instagram the key?
It was the key, I think. You know, we don't advertise. Drunk Elephant never did advertise. I always was a really big believer in word of mouth. If you deliver a good product, the person who likes it, you know, uses it, likes it, gets results. You can't shut them up. You know, they talk to their girlfriends. That's the best way to spread the word. But as far as social media, it was just incredible for us. And I didn't think it through with the packaging. It just worked out really well that the packaging was, you know, Instagrammable. That word didn't exist at the time.
Because you have color.
We have color. And so it was just a way for us to get out there and tell our story, educate on the philosophy, which was super important. We made the page really fun. We had, you know, we told jokes, we had animation. We did it differently, for sure. We sent the product out to influencers all over, and they would post it, and, you know, and you get followers, and it's very fun and exciting. But Instagram was my way of going online and talking straight to the consumer, like I had already done those years I was selling that bar. And it was my way of saying, look, oh, every Friday I'm going to go on. You can ask me any question you want. And I made myself very open and accessible to talk about the philosophy and why this brand was different. And that attracted a lot of attention and followers. And eventually Sephora called and said, you know, we're getting so much traffic from your brand into Sephora. And then we knew it was really working, that this fun approach to education, it was a little bit of a different kind of way to, you know, and people were enjoying it, and they were learning at the same time, and I think that's how we made the biggest impact.
Terrific. We obviously know you did a lot of things right, because Tiffany sold her brand to Shiseido in November of 2019.
Yes, almost a year ago. Which was such a good day to do that.
Yeah. So congratulations.
Thank you.
Oddly enough, they own Laura Mercier, two Houston-based
brands. We ended up in the same place.
So funny. So how does your life change now that you're part of a Japanese-based company?
You know, it hasn't really changed. I mean, I was super clear before we signed anything with Shiseido and made that agreement that if I was to stay on, that it would have to stay exactly the same. I really think that when you launch something like this and the business grows and you have, you know, hundreds of people working then now, it's super important to remember where you came from. What I mean by that is what you were doing when you started. And I tell people that all the time. What I was doing when I started needs to be what I always do. That keeps me interested. It keeps me, I get up every day, I'm excited to do the same stuff. And that's
creating product.
That's creating product. That's creating copy. You know, I help with the copy. I come up with the holiday kits. Those things that kind of give the brand its vibe is what I need to be involved with and stay involved with. And I really was, it was very much, you know, we have a really tight-knit team, and I chose every employee very carefully. We share values, and it's important for the brand to continue being that kind of brand. We have a list of, you know, codes and DNA, things about our brand that can never change. And so I just basically said, you know, we've got such a team and we love working together. I had only lost 2 people in 5 years and one came back. It's a team that really loves working together. And for Shiseido to come in, if they were to come in and never change, you know, start getting rid of people and bringing, it would change, we wouldn't be successful. And I remember sitting at a very serious lunch with the CEO and saying, listen, you know, we're always going to do well if you allow us to keep doing what we've done, grow and be what we've been. Otherwise, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. And they've honored everything we asked for. It's been really incredible and a great experience.
I think you're very fortunate, and I think that's key. You obviously did a lot of things right. Give me 2 or 3 things you did, you would redo, you would do differently.
I think I've said this to you before, and social media has largely been a good experience, luckily, but there's been some things that were hard for me personally, and I think opening myself up and just telling it like it is and saying things that aren't always popular to say. I mean, of course, my philosophy is a little bit controversial because I'm calling out ingredients that other brands use, you know, so I think just opening myself up and allowing myself to get engaged in some of the negativity on social media was a mistake. Because I'm sensitive and I took it personally, and you know, I've learned, so I don't do that as much anymore. And then the other thing I would say is that, you know, when you have people that you've hired and things are ticking along, if there's an issue with somebody and you feel they're not maybe on brand, or you feel maybe that they're not the best person for, you know, to be in the environment, I'm a people pleaser and I don't like confrontation, and I think acknowledging that and moving on and being able to remove those people is best for the company, and thinking of it as best for the company. I like to make everyone happy all the time. So I would say just knowing that and recognizing, you know, you have to have people around you that are, you know, so I wish I would have done that a little bit differently and been stronger. But it's all good in the end, because, you know, it's all worked out very well.
So if you were talking to young female entrepreneurs out there, what mm-hmm. would you tell them?
I would say, and I do that often, I love doing it. I get approached a lot to do with high school and college age people. And what I tell them all the time is that if you have something that you've come up with that the marketplace needs, that you don't see that's out there, that you really have a space that can be filled, go for it. But don't look around and don't try to go in and fit in the industry. Don't try to, if you're fit in, you're not going to stand out. Follow your gut, you know, stay in your lane. Don't try to be someone you're not. And all of that ends up working. You know, it's like when you decorate a house and you're not trying to match things, but you're picking them out because they're your taste. It all ends up going together. And it's the same with anything. You know, following my gut on every single, you know, thing that we decided to do worked out really well, and the brand stays cohesive. And you do. It's how you stay unique. And so many people try to talk you out of things. You know, don't listen. Take advice, but don't change who you are.
Congratulations, Tiffany, on the sale of Drunk Elephant, on building such a beautiful brand, and for joining us today.
Thank you so much. I love to be here.
Thank you for watching the Global Business Women's Pod, brought to you by the Greater Houston Women's Chamber of Commerce. We cannot wait to see you next Thursday at 6 p.m. And remember, you can always find us at ghwcc.org.